Welcome to Take the Red Pill,
where we explore the realities within our reality.
We are your hosts, David Deere
and Donald Dalton.
Before we get started on tonight's episode, we would like to acknowledge and welcome to our forum, In Dreams Awake. Thanks for signing on to the forum, In Dreams Awake, and drop us a line. Let us know what you think and some of our thoughts on the episodes and such. Anybody else interested in joining the forums, you can hop over through the link on our website, or you can go to taketheredpill.envisionplus.net.
This week, we are exploring the afterlife. What is it? Where do we go when we die? Does anybody really know? David, what is your view of the afterlife? What do you see it as? Is there life for us after we leave this mortal coil?
I do believe there is life for us. I believe that our consciousness continues to know itself as we continue. I think that's the best way of putting it. I think when we say the afterlife, it can be kind of deceptive because we consider life being alive, tissue, living and breathing, and carbon-based stuff. When we die, I think that's kind of what we're really talking about here. Mm-hmm. When we die, do we have an immortal soul? I do believe so, yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I believe the same way. I think it's very difficult to talk about the afterlife without bringing in a lot of religious views of what happens to us when we die.
Because why? Why is it difficult?
Because religions have been around for so long, and there are so many people who have religious belief systems that have a certain view of what happens when we die.
So you're saying it's difficult to talk about the afterlife without making a reference or without people kind of making religious conclusions to it?
More specifically, it's difficult to really talk about the afterlife without at least mentioning religious belief systems in some way, shape, or form.
Okay.
I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm just saying it's a little difficult.
We talked about this a little bit in the episode where we talk about the Big Kahuna.
Mm-hmm.
I think the afterlife has really kind of encouraged and guided, just as I mentioned in the God episode, how motivated we are and how influenced we are by the religious doctrines. Like mm-hmm. I said, if you know, when people are worried about being eternally punished, and they really believe that if they act or don't act a certain way that they will be eternally punished, they're going to say, all right, well, you know, I'm going to follow the set of rules so this doesn't happen to me.
And that's for having an afterlife of more of their choosing instead of less of their choosing. In other words, I'd rather go to Disneyland after I die than, you know, go to Detroit. No offense to anyone in Detroit.
Yeah.
So... but, you know, kind of like there's a big difference between, oh, let's go and have fun and have a party and, you know, my soul will be there eternally and, yeah, that'll be awesome and that'll rock, as opposed to, yeah, I don't want to be stuck in a factory, you know, on an assembly line for the rest of my life.
Well, here's an interesting question then. Right now, if we have the Judeo-Christian idea, especially the Christian idea, and some other religions about the fact is how what you do in life determines what happens when you die, mm-hmm. as far as a reward and punishment system, that seems to be prevalent. Now, I personally believe that there is no reward and punishment system. And I do believe that the soul is immortal, that when we die physically, we don't really die. I mean, we don't cease to exist, per se.
Yeah,
we continue to exist even though our body is not serving us anymore. Now, my question is, do you think that if the majority of people accepted that we continue immortally as a soul and we don't really die per se, do you think that would have people have more of a moral behavior because they're not so afraid of their candle being snuffed out? Or do you think it would lead to a less moral behavior saying, I've got nothing to lose because this is going on anyway, and so, you know, there's no holds barred?
I think having a belief in an afterlife to begin with influences people to live in a way so that if there is a reward system in the afterlife, then just in case, you know, don't want to get there and be like, oh, I was wrong for, you know, 100 or for 80 or 90 years while I was alive. I think it will influence their behavior. Whereas if it was scientifically proven that there was absolutely no life afterwards whatsoever and there was... we could prove it beyond any shadow of a doubt, and then I think people would probably have less inclination to follow religious belief systems as closely as they do in the Judeo-Christian sense, where, you know, there is reward for living a good life. When you take a lot of the religious dogma out and you take that reward system for the kind of life that you live out, then puts a lot more responsibility onto your morality and on your ethics and how you believe, because you have to define them by yourself. Mm-hmm. My belief is that majority of human beings, of individuals, are, you know, innately good, with the few exceptions here and there. And this brings me to a question that you kind of made me think about a few minutes ago, where if there is no reward or, you know, punishment in the afterlife, regardless of who you are, are you implying that people that, like Hitler, let's say for Hitler, like he gets to be equal with Mother Teresa in the afterlife?
They roommates. They could be potentially roommates in the lottery, because it is a lottery system, you know. I drew Hitler. Well, so, you know, that's an interesting question, because to answer that question, I really want to touch on a lot what people talk about with the NDEs, near-death experiences. Oh, okay. There is the idea that there's a life review, and then there's also the idea that all the choices we made in life, you will inherently experience what effect your choices had on everyone else, mm-hmm. to one degree or another, that you will actually experience what people experienced in some way or another.
So what if you're Hitler and you go through the life review and like, that was a good life. I did a lot of stuff. I brought a whole country together under my rule, and, you know, he had absolutely no remorse for any kind of anything that he had done in his whole life. After the whole life review, is there still like, okay, well, we'll log that into the Akashic records and then we'll just move you on to the next room?
No, the implication there is if he's experiencing the effect of what his choices and actions had on everybody else, he would experience the trauma, the horror, the pain, the atrocities, mm-hmm. that his decisions led to. He would continue to experience them. And this is my understanding of it, mm-hmm. I'm curious about this. Not that I'm saying I believe this is exactly the way it works.
Yeah.
From what's come back from NDEs and people who communicated with the deceased and things like that. Idea being that is if he has to kind of, you know, understand that experience, if he goes through those, it's not just the people who suffered the Holocaust. It's their generations. It's the people that the Holocaust life touched in one way or another. Mm. And it goes on for generations and generations and generations. I do believe, you know, you could make a choice. You could walk down the road and you could punch a guy in the face at random. And then he's kind of mad about it. And you have to experience that. And you have to experience all the things that happened to him as a result of that punch in the face. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of like making copies of copies of copies. Eventually, it just kind of washes itself out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But with the Hitler case, it's going to take a big, long time to wash itself out. And I think that that is kind of what they're implying.
What I was looking for is what happens if, you know, his spirit experiences all this stuff, you know, for however long and however painful it was. And let's say he's just really, really, really doesn't care. He's very mm-hmm. apathetic. It's like, yeah, okay, now we're doing another few million generations or people that were falling for a few generations, and like, yeah, bring it on. He's just like, his soul is just very masochistic or something, I don't know. And basically, is the life review an opportunity to feel remorse for injustices to others? And if there is a feeling of remorse, do you, you know, move on to another level of existence? And if there is no remorse, do you move on to a lower level of existence?
Well, see, I have trouble with that. The reason I have trouble with that is because it implies a sentencing system in a way. Mm-hmm. It implies judgment. And it implies right and wrong. I mean, here on this earthly realm, yeah, we say, you know, it's wrong to, you know, sentence 12 to 20 million people to death.
Oh, yeah.
It's just wrong as far as we're concerned. You know, in the spirit world, if they're like, you know what, you don't really ever die, so it's an experience. We think it's really short-circuiting your understanding of your connection to all that is, but it's an experience. Like we talked about in the other episode. I don't believe that there's a punishment system, but I do believe that there is a system of movement of energy.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have what would be, what I would say is kind of low vibrations, actions that have low vibrations will create and attract low vibrations. I think that that's kind of really the better way of looking at it for me.
Yeah, that's actually what I was about to mention is, you know, for me personally, I see everything as vibrating at a certain rate. If you're talking about souls, every soul has a certain vibration, or every spirit has a certain vibration as well. Like the Mother Teresa spirit has a different vibration as opposed to the Hitler spirit. Mm-hmm. Having those two vibrations going in the same place after the life review would be very discordant. It'd be like a very bad chord on a piano being played, and it just sounds terrible. Whereas, you know, like what you said, it goes along with much more where I believe, where whatever your vibration is, that's where you're categorized in. And, you know, if the whole afterworld, afterlife, after existence was a city, for example, mm-hmm. then those that vibrate at a lower level will be in the projects, and those that vibrate at a higher level would be, you know, in the upper level stuff. And they're all part of the city. They're all giving to the community of the universe. They're able to create the, maintain the harmony of balance between different vibrations and different notes of the universe.
It makes sense. What you're saying makes a lot of sense. I think what you're saying is that you will just naturally, that vibration would naturally resonate along with those either similar or harmonic vibrations.
To be honest, I mean, you can look at it from people that you meet and people that you know that are alive right now. You know, there are people that get along instantly, really, really quickly, just after they met. And then there are people that you may know for an extended period of time, like weeks or months or even years, where as much as you may want to, you just really have a difficult time having any kind of really good rapport with them. Mm-hmm. I kind of look at it like that. In the afterlife, in the huge mechanism of the universe, I believe that it wants to maintain, you know, a balance and cohesion and harmony. So therefore, people that vibrate in concert with one another would be put together in the same area, and that wouldn't necessarily be a punishment. That's just where you're put and
where you end up. I like that idea, because to me, when you say put, it implies that there's some master controller that's saying you go here, you go here, you go here.
Yeah, well, it's like, okay, you don't have to name names or anything, but I mean, I think we've all experienced people that, you know, we've never gotten along with. There have been times that we've tried to get along with and had a rapport with, and it's just from the moment we met them, there's just something we just like, you know,
right.
we can't get along with these people. And over time, there may have been a getting to a point where you're able to get along with them better, have a little bit more of a rapport. But then there's those people where you meet them in the first minute or two, you're just like, wow, yeah, and you know, you may become best friends for the rest of your life. I mean, I've had those. It blows me away every single time, and I think that's, from my perception, kind of like how things are. And so, in the afterlife, it's just not a reward or punishment system. It's like, so, if you're vibrating at this level, who do you want to hang out with? Well, you know, you probably want to hang out with people that you feel most comfortable around, and those people are probably people that also vibrate at your same level. That brings into the whole idea of, well, if we're going to end up being with people who vibrate at whatever level we end up with anywhere, and there's no punishment or reward per se, and you're just going to end up with people that vibrate at your same vibration anyway, then what's the use in being a good person or a bad person? Or where does the morality, where does the ethical stuff come in from that?
Well, that's interesting, because the ethical stuff is, I don't really think there's an afterlife basis for it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of atheists in this world. One of the arguments against atheism and to live a pious and religious life is that if you don't have any framework from which to set your morality, then you're going to end up an amoral person. Which I know a lot of atheists that are quite moral people, and they just know. They just have a basis for morality. It's just, you're knower knows right and wrong. I mean, people who do wrong know they're doing wrong. They just don't care. Or the what they get out of it is much higher than they would if they're doing the right thing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I think that's just, I think that's miswiring and misfiring is what that is. I don't think there's a correlation between what happens and transpires in the afterlife to what we do in our, you know, our sense of morality or our moral compass.
So basically, no matter what we do, we're going to be wherever we be, and that's just it?
No. I'm thinking that, you know, I think the thing is we are thinking in terms of, when it comes to the afterlife, the problem is when we think of physical terms, that's throwing everything out of whack.
Oh, yeah.
Because what you're doing is you've got to imagine that your consciousness resides with your skin peeled off and thrown away. So if you're operating from a place of consciousness that does not have the vehicle of the body, how are you going to perceive things? I mean, if you're dead, I mean, and you're not confined to having to, you know, get from point A to point B by walking, then there, when you talk about things like places don't really apply. And when you're thinking about thoughts, what's the difference between what's a thought and what's real? If you're dead, there is no difference. It's all the same.
You can be somewhere just by thinking about it.
Exactly.
Instantly.
Right. And because you don't have a body to place you anywhere, there is really no place per se. But since we're talking about energy, energy does have vibrations and frequencies and resonances. What you're talking about with vibrations, that's very apt. And I think the vibrations constantly shift and change. I think, you know, for the deceased, I think an intention, if a deceased has an intention, you know, depending on the intention will depend on the vibration. And the vibration will attract and create things that might translate physically. I mean, there's people that talk about communications from their loved ones that have passed. And there's all sorts of weird ways they say they do. The phone rings, they smell flowers, you know, they see a license plate on a car, you know.
They get a text message. I've heard of that, too.
They get a text message. Yeah, I've heard the same thing, you know. They don't get telegrams anymore because even the dead know that telegrams are obsolete. So.
The telegram is dead, just like us. Let's upgrade our technology a little bit.
Exactly, right? The telegram went into the light, and they are like, yeah, come with us.
Yeah, they have a whole technological tech support center in the afterlife, and they have all kinds of companies out there just like we do here, and it's just like, did you get the new phone that lets you talk to the living?
Yeah, I know. Firmware upgrade, right?
Yeah. Oh, no, I'm still on 1.566.002. Oh, dude, you got to upgrade to 1.570335.
Well, I mean, that might be part of it. Let's use the upgrade analogy lightly. But because there's a lot of people like, please don't geek out on us, some of our listeners. But what you do is like when you upgrade something, it isn't necessarily better. It's just keeping up with the current technology, or it's cleaning up things that didn't work so well, or it's to make things run more efficiently, right? And I think that with in the afterlife, I think that it's upgrades is just your frequency resonating at a higher level. And a higher level means that you're more in harmony with from that which you came. In other words, you being a part of everything and all that is.
So how would you upgrade your frequency in the afterlife? Would it just be a thought that you wanted to vibrate higher? Or, I mean, how would you do that?
I think it's probably pretty complicated. I think there's a lot of...
Good answer.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm trying to translate, you know, life as a non-corporeal, you know, frequency. That's what I'm trying to do. But I think it's like the sum total of experiences. And I think we need to include any multiple incarnations that we've lived.
Oh, yeah.
So you've got the sum total of all of these experiences that you've lived or that you're living, because again, time, I don't think is an aspect when it comes to the afterlife. You know, you don't have the chemical, you know, moving forward through the body and aging process. So how is time relevant when you're dead? In the afterlife, time is just a matter of a series of frequencies and changes, and experiences is a series of frequencies and changes, and they fit together like a clockwork with also other things, you know. And it's really finding out how your frequencies fit in with the grand mass of all these frequencies and how they affect everything, how what you create affects the sum total of creation, how you are creating, co-creating in collaboration with every other creative force in existence.
So for you, that's your belief system with the ultimate goal of us as our consciousness, as our intelligence, as our beliefs, and everything like that, is to be in harmony with everything else that is?
It's really more of self-discovery. I think we are learning what we are. We're learning how to be. We are learning how to become what we are already. Mm-hmm. We're just exploring and playing and finding the myriad of ways that we can be in, the myriad of ways that we can express ourselves, and they're infinite and unlimited. If they're infinite, why not try as many things on as you can? Mm-hmm. Why not just go for broke in the exploration process?
Kind of like Hitler wanting to not only be the dictator, but also be, you know, one of the people in the camps that the dictator's effect has on them. And also one of the, you know, second generation from the survivors of the camps or in that whole area. And basically, that's kind of an interesting idea. So the energy of Hitler expressing itself in every possible fashion and way for a multitude of generations from the time of, you know, that happened. In other words, Hitler is Germany experiencing itself through that time, but also at the same time, since there is, you know, since time in and of itself, once you get out of the physical, is not linear, is experiencing the effect of all, you know, it could have multiple lives that are affected by the life of Hitler. You know, like one life could be the grandson of one of the people that were in the SS and were close to Hitler, and then another one could be, you know, one of the survivors that was a son or daughter of, or great-grandson or daughter of them. Right. And being able to express itself in all those multifaceted ways all at the same time. And, you know, from our perception, then if it's all the same spirit, if it's all the same soul, if it's all the same energy, just, you know, trying on different clothes, seeing what kind of experiences it has, then the morality goes out really fast, because one life is experiencing, you know, as Hitler, and one life is experiencing as you know, someone who was killed in the camp, and the other one is somewhere in between where they're just an officer, and another one is somebody who is hiding them out in their attic or their cellar or something like that. Mm-hmm. So is that more what you're talking about?
I think that there's a lot of what I'm talking about in that idea, definitely. You know, the thing is I think what you touched on it when you said, you know, it's if we're all really interconnected, you know, are we really eventually just kind of swapping these experiences? You know,
Dave, can I borrow
really
your clothes?
Yeah,
I need a shirt.
You know what? That experience looks pretty good. I want to try that on.
Yeah. But, shoes don't fit.
If you've seen my feet, my shoes aren't. Other shoes aren't going to fit my feet. But I'm going to push it a little bit here.
Ooh, go for it.
Yeah, I'm going to push it, and it might make some people uncomfortable. We are all connected to the degree that, you know, I've probably had an oxygen atom go through my body that Hitler had in his body at one point. Mm-hmm. You know, does that make me evil and Hitler and ooh and bad, right? But let's say that we're talking about the human experience, and let's say there is kind of a human experience that is all about, well, let's just find the beauty of creating and creating who we are, and the beauty of really discovering, you know, our own wonderful creative expression. Mm-hmm. And the human race en masse is just not getting it. Let's say that.
Okay.
You know, the human race is saying, you know what, we're really missing out on the beauty of this all. And then some human soul or whatever you want to say says, you know what, we need a hard lesson here, and I'm going to volunteer to play the role. And you know what, it's going to cost me dearly. I'm probably going to suffer through the suffering of, you know, countless people, but we need this as an experience. Let's say that, for example, if the Holocaust had not happened, our level of compassion would be greatly reduced to what it is now.
Hmm.
What if the Holocaust awakened a level of compassion in us that was not present until it happened? And so it's kind of a really backwards and horrific way of looking at things to say, in order to learn compassion, we needed to experience this level of an atrocity, a crime against our own humanity. But yet it was necessary for us to really appreciate ourselves as being connected and being one and really awakening ourselves to loving each other. And somebody stepped up and said, you know what? I'm going to take it on the chin and I'm going to be the one, I'm going to be the bad guy because I love the human race. So I know the human race needs this lesson. So I'll suffer on behalf of everyone.
Basically kind of a spiritual messiah type thing.
Yeah, it's messianic in a different way. It's a messianic from a very dark place. And I don't want to condone it. I mean, seriously, I mean, number one, how many people would really want to be willing to do that? To, you know, take, you know, dozens of millions of lives. But then another case is if we truly do experience all of the effects on humanity that we ourselves have initiated, would your spirit and soul, how many souls would really be willing to step up and say, I am willing to experience the suffering of hundreds of millions of people? I'm willing to go through everything they go through, all the suffering and atrocities that they've gone through. I'm willing to do it. And they say, yeah, you know, you're going to do that. If you create it, you're going to experience it.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, that's like, wow.
Yeah, I understand the whole contrast that you're making there. And I think the question then presents itself, well, is that absolutely necessary? Let's take the whole Jesus thing since we're on the whole Messiah thing. You know, he was more of, y'all kind of not being so nice to each other. If you were a little nicer, then things would work a little bit better. Kind of like getting more flies with honey than with vinegar. Instead of being forced into compassion, basically saying, hey, compassion's a good way to go. I think you should go this way. You know, go ahead and go.
Yeah, okay. I know exactly what you're saying. You're saying, why not take the Christ road? Which is the teacher of love and all that other stuff. Well, if you take that road and it's not working, then what? Do you do it again? If it didn't work before, why is it going to work again? You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
It's like, if it worked so well, why did we need a Holocaust to increase our level of compassion? But before the Christ drama played itself out, the Christ scenario and the Christian mythos did increase a level of compassion more than existed before. I mean, governments changed their nature. The human value changed its nature after the messianic drama that played out in the Christ story.
It almost sounds like from what you're describing is that in Christ's time, things were so bad and negative and people just really didn't care about anybody. So then when he came in, his message was at the same level of intensity as Hitler's when he came in, where people were just like, you know, we have our little squabbles and it's just like, I don't trust you. And this other nation's like, I don't really trust you. And then it's like, well, here's somebody that we almost all nations can agree like, yeah, okay, look, I can play with you to make sure that he gets off the playground because we really see him as completely somebody we really don't want to play with.
Yeah, and you know what? Let's take another approach to this then.
Okay.
For the guy, when he got on the playground here, was he invited on the playground because the playground was full of broken glass and beat up tires and, you know, snakes and all, you know, sulfuric acid? You know what I mean? In other words, it's like, would Hitler have even come along if we were already in a good place? Was it the human psyche en masse, the sum total of humanity, where we were spiritually in our growth, you know, if we want to say that, that enabled an area for Hitler to step in and do what he did? If we were operating at a higher vibration with a lot more compassion, with a lot more understanding of our connection, of the fact that we all are interconnected, that we are all reflections of each other, I don't think the environment would have been fertile for him to have even existed and operated.
Oh, yeah. It's like a fish doesn't really survive on land because it's not made to survive on land. Just like, I think that's kind of like what you're talking about. If Hitler is a fish and he tries to come on land and, you know, take over these different places and cities and countries and everything, you know, he's not going to survive very well because the environment is not conducive to him surviving there. And therefore, you know, he's not going to be able to live. Whereas if we're all under the sea, and, you know, then it's like, oh, we're totally ripe for his, for this big fish to come in and go and do whatever. It almost sounds like, as a world consciousness, what you're saying is, as a world consciousness, there was something that we made the energy, the vibration of everyone that at that time that was living in those, in that generation, that allowed for somebody such as Hitler to come through.
Absolutely.
So, but
absolutely
also allowed for Mother Teresa to come through as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think it's a full spectrum. You know, there is a full spectrum to it. With the Hitler scenario, there are people that were ordered to round up a population of people and to kill them.
Mm-hmm.
And they did it.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, yeah, Hitler said to do it, but what, I mean, Hitler said, you know, you can do this or you could die. Just kind of, it's kind of like what we were talking about in the, you were talking about the consciousness, the group consciousness.
Oh, yeah.
And groupthink, is that the term you used?
Yeah, exactly.
And the statement was, you know, there's only so much that a crowd will incite you to do, you know, depending on where your moral center is.
Mm-hmm.
And these people that, you know, they were given orders to kill countless, you know, populations of people. And if they were given the choice to do that or to die, there'd be a lot of people that are like, yeah, you know what? Sorry, you take my life because I'm not going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But these are not the people that followed out those orders.
Yeah. Switching gears just a little bit.
Sure.
There are mediums all over that talk to the dead. There are people that have deceased family members that are able to talk to them. You know, there are people that experience from near-death experiences that are experience part of the afterlife. I'm curious about if we bring in a belief of reincarnation, if a family member, you know, passes on, you know, is there a certain time? I know there's a whole idea that time doesn't exist, but how long does the energy of a family member actually hang around? Or are we able to communicate with them? To ask it a little differently, okay, let's say my great-great-great-great-grandson wants to communicate with me because he found some papers of something that I wrote on a blog, you know, 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And he wants to have a little more clarification or whatever, and so he goes to medium. Is my deceased energy there still being able to be contacted and get information from, or has my spirit moved on in that time?
Well, there's a moving on and there's a not moving on. You know, I think of it as a stamp. I think it is chiseled in stone to a degree. If something exists, it will always exist. That's what I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So the essence of Donald as you are, in other words, you see yourself this way, right?
Yeah.
The essence of how you've been, you know, you in seventh grade will always exist. You are different, but yet the same as the Donald in seventh grade. But there is the seventh grade Donald that will always exist. There's this version of you that always exists. But there's a part of you that will always continue to change, and there are parts of you that will continue to exist as they have been in time. And I think that when we call on our ancestors, there's like a lot of Native American traditions,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of indigenous and aboriginal traditions that do place a huge value on calling on your ancestors, because your ancestors continue to reside. They continue to exist. There's aspects that continue to exist, and there's aspects of the ancestors that have become something else. It's kind of like, you know, it's kind of like the cells in your body. You know, you're not using the cells in your body, the same cells in your body you were using 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But yet, you know, you're using completely different material, literally. I mean, it's not even the same body, but it's the same blueprint that's telling them where to go, all the, you know, cells and molecules and DNA and stuff. I think that's what it is. I think it's the essence of that ancestor that it resides. You can call on them and they will be there.
Mm-hmm. So let's take this into a little different, you know, a little bit of what if scenario, if you're willing to play along.
Oh, yeah, you know me. Let's play.
I'm not sure if you've heard about soul catchers, the technology that is getting to a point now where you can actually put at least some of your consciousness or some of your brain waves into re-recorded by a computer and used as, you know, an artificial intelligence. And the whole idea of a soul catcher is that it literally takes your essence. You know, kind of like, what was that? That movie. Oh, Lawnmower Man. Mm-hmm. Where his whole essence eventually, you know, projected itself into a computer system. Mm-hmm. They're talking about this as, you know, as technology gets more and more complex and, you know, it reaches higher and higher levels, that possibly someday we may be able to do that where we can literally just make a cut and paste of our consciousness and put it into a computer. And this goes from what you're saying with, you know, we change over time. If we exist as ones and zeros, then do we change at all, or are we just basically a snapshot, a picture of who we are at that moment? Are we still, or do you think we would still have an opportunity, our spirit, our consciousness would still be able to, you know, over, let's say we're able to exist for 200 years instead of, you know, roughly 100, give or take. Mm-hmm. And we, you know, we grow and change in our physical bodies. Would we still have an opportunity to grow and change in that? And I'll let you answer that before I continue
on. Well, I do think so. I mean, I think that who we are is, you know, who we are is defined by the reference point. It's everything is defined by a reference point. In other words, let's take the photograph that you mentioned.
Okay.
That photograph may seem to stay the same, but when you pick up the photograph and look at it today, and then you pick up and look at it 5 years ago, you will react to it differently. There's a day you may look at it and say, eh, whatever, and put it down. Or a day you go, oh yeah, that was a good time. You know, look how happy I am. Here's the funny thing is that photo changes every time you look at it. The image on it stays the same, but the experience you have, relating back to the experience you had at the time the photo was taken, changes every time you look at it.
Good point.
So, like, if you're talking about the whole idea of putting the essence of you onto, you know, some kind of computer medium.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that'll be there. But once you reflect back or once you interact with that essence changes on a very metaphysical level.
This brings up an interesting thing, whereas let's say you're able to put your consciousness onto a computer network medium type thing, and then somebody makes a copy of you and puts you on a completely different network, and then you put those two networks together, you could literally talk to yourself.
But it wouldn't be yourself anymore. It would be just two different aspects of yourself.
No. I'm talking about what if you're able to make a complete copy of who you are, everything that you are, all your subconscious and conscious thoughts and beliefs and attitudes and experiences all in one thing. And then the moment you put that into the computer, you also made a copy of it and put it over there into another computer. And so you're basically, you have yourself split up and copied into two different computers.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you're able to link those computers to where they're able to talk to each other, I guess theoretically could talk to yourself. You could be your own best friend.
Yeah, you. I know what you're saying. You're saying that you're still in two different places and sharing the same experience, correct?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but there's the experience of you in one place and the experience of you in another place, and that's where you are different.
I see, because the exact circuitry of one server is not the exact circuitry of another server.
Exactly. One server is in one place, one server is in another. And I think that, you know, here's the interesting thing about, you know, when we talk about the afterlife, is that our consciousness is residing outside of time.
Mm.
So our consciousness can be more literally in the past than we can. And then think about this. It's like we kind of touched on this on the nature of time too, is that if you're not in a corporeal body,
mm-hmm.
and when we say that your thoughts and your reality are really the same, you know, to us, we have thoughts, they don't seem real. But when you have tangible things, they do seem real. You know, we reflect on the past, we're like, oh, that's a memory. We look at, you know, what's in front of us, and that's an experience. Well, when you're in the deceased, the memory and the experience, you know, now where's the skin to divide that?
Oh.
And so now every time you think in the past, you actually go back in the past.
Interesting. So whenever Hitler or Mother Teresa is thinking about somebody they had a conversation
with. You
really
want to get these two together, don't you? I think that's why you want to see them go out or something. You know, I want to set up Hitler with Mother Teresa. It's a warped experiment on your part. I trust you.
It's like, let's try to match historical figures that are totally different and see if it'll work.
Well, on eHarmony and those 27 points of compatibility, I wonder how they'd match up. There's two, maybe. We both like chocolate, you know.
We both like large groups of people that we affect.
Yeah, right.
I like being in the Middle East more often, and I like Europe a little bit more. Like, but we both like to travel.
Yeah, we both like to travel.
I like to have a lot of people around me catering to my every whim, and I like to cater to everyone else. Oh, jeez. Oh, yeah. That could get really fun really fast. Yeah, I don't know. I keep bringing those up just for the those two individuals, just for the complete contrast of who they are. And I'm noticing we're bringing up Hitler a lot more in some of our episodes when we were talking about morality and stuff like that.
Well, he's kind of the poster child of immorality, as it were, you know. But you were going to make a comparison. You were going to use those two as a reference. And what was it regarding? Memory and time travel?
Yeah, you know what? I totally forgot where I was going with that.
Well, you know what? I owe you an apology because I hijacked it with the joke.
And, no, that was hilarious. That was very good. If I remember it, I'll bring it up. I think it was just a little little itty bitty thing, a little add on or whatever. So I don't think it was monumentally important. But you take the whole linear time aspect out of it. It gets very interesting with the afterlife and reincarnation, because then there isn't really any reincarnation. That's just literally one spirit, one soul having numerous incarnations at the same time throughout history.
Right, exactly.
And so
including future incarnations
that
in our perception have not happened yet.
Yeah, and so that's where the afterlife gets really interesting. If you are all these incarnations of, you know, expressing themselves throughout all of history, then does the afterlife really apply solely to just one of those incarnations, or does it apply to the spirit and soul as a whole with every incarnation?
I think the latter. And I think the spirit and the soul watches every incarnation change. This is kind of like the nature of time and reality rolled into the afterlife discussion.
Okay.
I always think that it probably goes a little something like this. Your experience that you're having now and that you've continued to have in the past as you recognize it, it's like, I think we talked about this with the whole, remember Picard and the flute thing, and, you know, he lived an entire life in the matter of minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Remember we talked about that?
Oh, yeah. Great episode. Yeah.
This is like in the afterlife. The afterlife's like, you know what? If we make these choices, let's delve into this experience a little bit more. And when it delves in, you're living this whole life right now. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And you're experiencing the whole thing. It's just the soul in the afterlife has sat and said, I'm going to make this experience. So let me go do there, and then it just comes right back. You know what I mean? It goes, has our experience, comes right back. But yet, to us, it feels like this long, linear, stretched-out life experience.
So we're basically just a holodeck program that our soul's playing, experiencing, you know, whatever fantasy it has at the moment.
Well, kind of, but I think and the thing is we're trying to think in such linear human terms that I think we miss a lot of the picture. I mean, because what we're doing is we're thinking of ourselves as a canvas being painted.
Mm-hmm.
We don't even see the brush being dipped into the paint. We don't even see the paint being manufactured.
Mm-hmm.
And I think with the soul in the afterlife is basically, this is very real, and this is very created, and this is very happening, and this will exist forever and ever and ever. I think it's too complicated for us to put words on. And when you have mediums communicating with spirits, and when you have people contacting from the afterlife into present life, and, you know, you have the NDs and stuff like that, they're like, all right, let's explain this to you as best as you can understand. Because you're not going to get it past three dimensions. So they do. They just say, all right, this is the experience as best as you can understand it. And you say, but we want to understand it more. And they say, well, you know what? You will eventually, because you're going to be dead. You know.
Now, that brings up an interesting question. What about plants, or specifically animals? People I know can say, like, oh, I had a cat when I was a child, and now 20 years later, I have another cat, and their personality is almost exactly exactly the same.
Mm-hmm.
You know, would that be an example of the spirit of of that specific animal, of that specific cat, deciding to re-express itself into the physical to spend another life with, you know, with their caregiver?
Possibly. That's a tough one, but I think there's a possibility to it. I think animals don't reside in an afterlife the way we do. I think that we are such a powerful and creative energy as human beings that we, you know, I think the animals tend to operate more on a kind of global, we understand what role we are and we're going to play that role and we're good with it. And there's a little bit of variance in between, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I think we just kind of attract whatever resonance that the animal's personality, you know, if we talk about personality as a set of frequencies,
mm-hmm.
I think that we can extract that same or a similar set of frequencies into another incarnation of a pet.
Hmm.
You know, I'm guessing all this stuff out.
Yeah, oh, I know. Hey,
I don't know.
Hey, that's what we do in these episodes.
That's exactly what we do.
we use each other as sounding boards and try and figure out what comes out. Yeah, and the thing is, if that would be true with animals, then you know that would also be true with, you know, friends and possibly even family members.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that we attract the friends at times in our life that resonate most succinctly with us where we are at any given point in our life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the friends that become long-term friends that we keep in touch with are friends that, you know, our personalities, our vibrations, our energies are able to grow together with, and, you know, basically, you know, like that. Because, I mean, I think everyone has friends that, you know, they met them and it was like, oh, that was a great summer. You know, I was on vacation and so-and-so and I met these people and it was just like awesome. And then, you know, it's just like you may or may not ever see them again. But, you know, years later, you're just like, yeah, that was a great time. And then there's other people that you meet, you know, like first or second grade that you know, you grow old together and you're like, hey, do you remember back? And you're like, I totally remember that. That was a good time. Yeah. You know?
So you're saying it's that kind of gelling of frequencies.
I'm going off with what you said, where, you know, we're able to attract the type of personalities, the type of animals and people that our personalities, that our frequencies would be in harmony with. And so I guess what that goes with into the afterlife is people that are able to communicate with those that have passed on. I'd almost have to say that they would have to be able to be in harmony with their frequencies to actually communicate with the frequencies or the personalities of people that have passed on. In other words, if you have a medium who's trying to contact somebody who's passed over and, you know, they're personalities totally don't mesh, would they actually be able to contact them at all?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. I think intention probably would have a lot to do with that. You know, you hear a lot of cases about the deceased always wanting to help people on the side, mm-hmm. wanting to help family and things like that. And I think there's that connection that if you've had that connection, I think you'll continue to have it, you know, when somebody crosses over, and that will enable communication. If you don't have it, yeah, you're right. Is the intention compatible? Because I think that those on the other side have their own set of goals and wants and, you know, hopes and all that other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think if those mesh up, you know, yeah.
So what would be your hopes and goals and stuff on the other side? Would it be, you know, obviously looking after family and friends that, you know, are still alive. Beyond that, what would be your hopes and goals or dreams?
I think for the spiritual growth of a set of people or people in general or humanity, you know, I mean, because I always think about, you know, there must be something so, I don't know, when you're on the other side, it seems like when you throw away all the physical stuff, you also throw away a lot of the negativity. I mean, how many times have you heard stories about people that have had a near-death experience and have actually experienced a lot of what of, you know, the essence of the afterlife?
Mm-hmm.
And they say that they experienced just this essence of pure love,
mm-hmm.
of this pure joy and love, and they've never felt anything so overwhelmingly like love as they have at that time,
mm-hmm.
To pardon the use of the word. And then, you know, of course they say, you got to go back. And they're like, what, are you kidding me? This is awesome. I'm not going back there. What a pain and all that other business, you know. So I wonder if kind of when your motivations are there, their motivations are out of the essence of love, that to where you return, you know, to what maybe that essence of love is, what we actually are, the essence of who we are, you know, in the non-physical form.
If that's what we are in a non-physical form, then here on Earth, we're basically having to overcome the contrast of our fears so that we can express more love. And then once we don't have our physical form anymore, we don't have to worry about fear anymore because we're not worried about dying.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I think that's a big part of it. That's a huge part of it there.
Basically, the reward if in the afterlife would be not having any fear.
Yeah, I would say that would be part of it. I mean, if you want to look at it as a rewards-based thing, I think there, you know, the reward is really kind of being able to go back home. That's what a lot of people, that's a lot of what I've heard too, is they say that they feel like they're home again, which I find is very, very, very interesting.
Well, yeah, that makes sense. If we all come from the same place, then we're all going to go to the same place. Every life would be a vacation from our pre-life, afterlife life.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually made a whole episode about that on the show Dead Like Me, which if you've never seen that series, it should have lasted a lot longer, but really, really awesome series.
Yeah.
If you're not familiar with the setup of the show, basically this, I think, 19-year-old girl who isn't really engaged in life, and she goes off to, she's out of high school, she goes to her job interview, and she gets pummeled by a toilet seat from a satellite as she's walking up the stairs. And instead of going into the afterlife, she becomes what they consider a reaper, which basically she goes to people who right before they die, and she removes their souls from their body so that their soul doesn't have to experience the pain of death.
Okay.
And in this episode, the kind of the whole idea of the thoughts of that she's having at this time is like, you know, it seems like a lot of afterlife lasts for so much longer than, you know, actual lives. And so what if our spirits and what if our lives that we have is actually the vacation from whatever we're doing when we're not alive?
That starts
messing with your head a little bit and starting you thinking on different lines. And that's why I was kind of thinking about when you said what you said. I was just like, yeah, I can kind
of
see that.
So what it sounds like you're saying is more of who we are, it resides in the afterlife than it really does here.
Well, yeah, going on to, I don't necessarily believe that completely. I'd have to think about it a little bit more. But the idea is, okay, you have your body, you're in a specific place right here. Your job that you go out to, you have your house that you live in, you have the stores that you go to, you have the city that you live in and the streets that you drive down. Let's say that is like your afterlife, that or your pre-life, or you not having a physical body. Now, when you actually go on vacation, you're going to some place that you don't drive down the streets all the time. You don't see the buildings, you don't see these buildings all the time. You don't have the people that are there. You don't see these people all the time. You're in a different place, and some things may work the same way if you're in the same country, or some things may work differently, depending on cultural and, you know, societal norms and whatever. And so that vacation to this other place would be like your life right here and right now. And so basically what it is when you go back home, you're literally going back to home to where you reside on a regular basis. And you just have vacations out to different places that are who you are, and you're completely there physically. You're experiencing, you know, whatever you're experiencing in that vacation with all of who you are. And, you know, sometimes you get lucky and bring a friend or, you know, whatever. So, which in this whole analogy that I'm working on, that friend would be your quote unquote soulmate that you meet in this incarnation, which was a previous episode.
Oh, okay.
And then, of course, the people that you know, help you out, like the hotel you stay in, your concierge, if you're in a really nice place, you know, they would be kind of like your, oh, I don't know, they would be one of your business partners or something, helping you figure out where to go and how to do things, and, you know, they'd be a resource for whatever you wanted to experience in that, or maybe a spirit guide. Oh, I guess it'd be more like a spirit guide.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah.
So basically, all we have to do to make this analogy make sense is whenever we go on vacation, that's like our incarnations. That's like our lifetime. And then whenever we go home, we have the memory of that vacation. We have the experiences of that vacation, and we're able to share them with, you know, our friends and family that, you know, like, oh yeah, I did this and that. And then, I don't know. I don't know where to go from there.
I like it. I think it stands nicely on its own. Yeah, it's a great analogy. We'll leave each other and our listeners to kind of marinate on that, because I like that that idea, the vacation in incarnations.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So at this time, I'd like to thank all of our listeners who have been joining us on our podcast and coming to listen to us and take this exploration with us. We really appreciate it. We really hope to have you listen again.
And as always, if you would like assistance removing subconscious programming or personal coaching from me, or even help finding your true passion and path in life, visit me at www.dondalton.com and sign up for a session.
And come check out my blog entitled I Am the Minister of Myself, where I share some introspections of what I'm learning on my life's path. You can find my blog at myownminister.wordpress.com. So, for Take the Red Pill, this is David, wishing you all a wonderful remainder of your life. We'll see you on the other side.
And this is Donald for DonDalton.com, wishing you a life fantastic, and an afterlife fantastic, too.